Well, hello. I'm with Aravinda Diga, who's just become £50,000 better off. I'm meeting you the following morning after his triumph in the Man Booker Prize. Aravind, congratulations.
Thank you.
You've written a novel which ventriloquizes a member of the Indian underclass. I mean, you as an Oxford-educated middle-class man, that takes some nerve.
Well, if everyone in India just, if authors followed a caste system of their own and each just wrote about his kind, you'd end up with something like what you have now. You'd just end up with novels that represent about 5% of Indians. It's important not just to, I think the whole point of being in literature, of being in imaginative fiction, is to try and get in under the skin of someone else and to speak in the voice of someone else. And I think that's the whole point of fiction. That's the reason I became a writer. I never wanted to write about someone like myself because, frankly, that's it's in a country like England, writing about myself or a middle-class person might be a fairly representative novel. But in India, a country where, by various estimates, 300 or 400 million people are still very poor, if you wrote about yourself as a middle-class person, it's possible, and a lot of people do that because your entire social circle is made up of people like you. And if there are servants, you kind of ignore them, or they don't really, they don't come out to you as full human beings. It's possible to write novels like that, and these are some of them are very good, and that's a perfectly legitimate venture. But I wanted to do something different. In a sense, it was very important for me to write about someone completely different. That was always the whole point of doing the book. And to capture the voice of this person.
So what catalyzed it for you? I mean, the novel. You were working as a Time journalist, touring India, were you? And did you come across people like the hero of the book?
Well, I don't know if I call him
yeah,
the hero.
Yeah.
Yes, very much so. So I met numerous... The main character, Balram Halva, is a composite of many, many different people. What I've tried to do is blend in into one or two characters numerous people I met as I travel. Rickshaw pullers, for instance. When I grew up in the south of India, which is economically and socially in many ways far more progressive than the north, I had never seen a rickshaw puller because they are banned in the south of India and economic conditions are too far progressive for there to be any need of a rickshaw puller. I had never been to the north. No one in my family, I think, had ever been to the north. When I came for Time magazine, I was based in Delhi, and Delhi is a city where you see rickshaw pullers all around you, and it was a real surprise for me. It didn't fit in with my idea of India that rickshaw pullers actually existed. And these are cycle rickshaws that are operating in Delhi, not manual. But in the city of Kolkata, in the city of Calcutta, you actually have hand-pulled rickshaws, the way that you see them in the old Tintin comics. So I was seeing people, I was seeing things that did not fit in with my idea of what India was about, because if you grew up in the south, you have a very different idea of what India is about. And as I traveled in the north, I was fascinated by people, peddling rickshaws for a living, because when you stopped and talked to them, they were quite smart. And this this intrigued and bothered me profoundly, because clearly some of these people are as smart, not smarter than anyone you'd meet at Oxford. And they spend their lives pulling a rickshaw. So I got to talking to them, and gradually I blend in. I tried to blend in a few of them into my main character, who is a blend of various rickshaw pullers, car drivers, chauffeurs, domestic servants that I met throughout my travels. So that's how he came about, as a result of my travels and my meeting various people in India.
He's also a murderer, and there's a suggestion in a way, towards the end of the book, this is a justified murder. It's a murder that he murders his boss, and through that murder he achieves a kind of freedom.
Well, I hope, and some readers feel this too, I hope it's ambiguous as to whether... there are two distinct crimes in this book. One is taking the money of his employer, and the other is killing the employer. I leave it up to the reader to decide to what extent they wish to pardon Balram Halvai for the two crimes he does. The second crime is really not pardonable, the killing of his master. And I hope there's enough in the book to suggest that he may not have killed his master for the reasons he says. I hope that it's clear that I am not the narrator, and I hope that the reader remembers to keep a certain ironic distance between himself or herself and Balram Halvai. I don't think murder is justified, no. And Balram, I think, is more disturbed than he may let on about this crime he has committed. At the same time, it is worth wondering, you know, as I said, when you meet rickshaw pullers in India, when you meet domestic servants, many of whom are very, very smart, all of whom are very smart. This is the surprising thing from a middle-class person to understand. You then begin to think, what if I were stuck there? I mean, the only reason he's doing that, he's pulling the rickshaw and I'm in the car, I'm in his office, is because I was born to, my father was a doctor, so I was born to someone who was well off. And that's the only difference between us. So what if one morning I woke up with my mind in his body? You know, what would I do? How could I just live a life like that? Wouldn't I try to get out of it? And could I really say that crime for a man like that is not justified? I would like readers to consider the morality of someone who shares their dreams but lacks all the means they have, education, healthcare, security from the police, to achieve those dreams.
Is your book an angry critique of modern-day India? It certainly seems to be to me, but maybe I'm, again, mistaking the narrator's voice for your voice.
Well, the book is entirely told in voice, in the narrator's voice, and there are points. Anger is an important, you know, clearly anger is central to this book, as is humor, I hope. What I would like the reader to wonder is to what extent he or she is being invited to share in Balaram's anger, and to what extent he or she is meant to be disturbed by it. One of the things you do notice when you travel in India and speak to people is the overturning of a traditional hierarchy in India, of a caste system, of a rigid socio-economic structure, has left a lot of people quite angry and confused about their place in life. And some of the things the poor are angry about are things that I too can be angry about, corruption, for instance, or poverty. But some of the things that people are angry about are things that I am not angry about. For instance, a lot of men coming from the villages to the towns are upset by the freedom that women have. And my narrator is fairly typical in that. But when you sit and talk to a lot of poorer people who have come to Delhi, they just have this... their attitudes to women are attitudes I might find reactionary, for instance. That is also fueling their anger, their attitude towards people of other religions, to people who are lower down than even they are in the socioeconomic structure. Part of what is getting them angry is a set of changes that I would view as positive, the fact that women can work, that, you know, people of any religion can rise up to government positions in India. So you have to, I think there are places in the book where I hope that the reader is aware that he or she should be careful about joining in Balaram's anger. So the anger is not my anger entirely. It's a novel. You're meant to get involved with it, and you're meant to be disturbed, and you're meant to be thinking about what Balaram is saying. It's not a political treatise. It's not a message novel. I hope it's a fully fleshed novel.
Just finally, was it a surprise to you to have won this award? And does it mean very much in India?
Well, yes, I am surprised because it's a first novel, and you know, just making the shortlist in itself is if you had told me that I'd make the shortlist, I would have found it hard to believe a month ago, 2 months ago. Because just getting on the long list seemed like such an incredible achievement for a first novel. And in India, yes, it means a lot in India. Salman Rushdie winning the Booker Prize, I think in 81 for Midnight's Children is an epochal event in the literary life of India, as was Arundhati Roy's victory and Kiran Desai's victory also. So it means a lot in India. The book was doing well in India well before the long listing. It had sold more copies in India than in any other country and was doing very well before the long listing. But ever since the book, the long listing and the short listing have driven sales through the roof in India.